and welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Kristen Martson. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Gwen. Welcome, and thank you for calling into Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Kristen Martson, and I'm a care manager for the autism team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of this conference, you will be able to transfer it into a brief 5-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After this survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's presentation. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cigna.com/autism. Scroll to the current topic section in the middle of your page and click on today's topic labeled Using Technology to Enhance Treatment and Increase Independence. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information, if your policy covers topics discussed in today's seminar, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Kaneen Geiger. Dr. Geiger currently oversees clinical operations for Colorado for Trumpet Behavioral Health. Dr. Geiger received her PhD in 2012 from Auburn University and has worked with individuals with developmental disabilities across the lifespan since 2003. Her primary research and clinical interests include the incorporation of technology to enhance treatment with individuals with developmental disabilities and evaluating treatments for autism to identify which are the most effective. Dr. Geiger, thank you for being here today. You are welcome to start your presentation.
Thank you for having me, and thank you, Kristen, for that warm welcome. My name is Kaneen Geiger, and I'm very excited to be here today to talk to you about using technology to enhance treatment and increase independence. Technology is advancing very quickly, and so sophisticated devices are becoming more easily accessible and more affordable. Technology can be a great asset to enhance your existing live treatment or can provide your sole source of treatment. However, because most technological devices offer standard treatments, they're still not a good substitute for a live expert who can adjust a treatment to your child's specific strengths and needs. There are also many things to consider when thinking about selecting the type of technology and how to use it to best teach your child new skills. This presentation will focus on video modeling and smartphone and tablet application, or apps, to teach new skills. However, there are many other types of technology that can be used to teach new skills, like computers, television shows, and virtual reality. So we'll start with video modeling. So when technology is used to teach imitation, it's called video modeling. With video modeling, a child watches a video of a skill being demonstrated and then has the opportunity to immediately imitate and practice that skill. Video modeling has been used to teach a variety of skills to children with varying ability levels. Many research studies have also been conducted using video modeling. Some skills that have been taught using video modeling include communication skills, like initiating conversations and having conversational interactions, social skills, such as giving and receiving compliments and taking the perspectives of others, play skills, including imaginative play and making play-related statements, daily living skills, for example, using purchasing items or self-care skills like hand washing and showering, and vocational or work skills like advertising as a retail mascot, learning how to work a register, and requesting help to complete work tasks. Video modeling is a great tool for teaching new skills, but it may not be the best method for teaching everyone. An individual who uses video modeling must have a few basic prerequisite skills. The child should already be able to sit quietly and pay attention to an instructor during one-on-one instruction most of the time. For a video model to be effective, the child must be able to pay attention to the model while it's playing before he can replicate the steps. Additionally, the child should already be able to imitate some skills. It may not yet be time to try video modeling if the child can only imitate a few specific actions. However, if she's already begun to develop imitation so that she can imitate after seeing a model only once or a few times, then she would be a great candidate for video modeling. Research has also shown that the skill of matching two-dimensional pictures to three-dimensional objects may be necessary for video modeling to be effective. The video model is the kind of two-dimensional representation, while the imitation kind of occurs in the three-dimensional world. And also, preliminary research suggests that what's called delayed imitation may also be important for success with video modeling. Delayed imitation means that the child can imitate the skill at least a few seconds after the model has been completed. So since the child watches the video and then completes the task afterwards, there's kind of a natural delay that's unavoidable. And that's why the research is suggesting that delayed imitation is important. So individuals who don't yet have these prerequisite skills that I just described are most likely not yet ready to learn from video modeling. So if you do want to continue to pursue video modeling, it's probably best to focus on teaching those prerequisite skills first. Additionally, video modeling may not be appropriate for your child if he engages in property destruction, like hitting or throwing objects, mostly because the video or video equipment might be damaged during an episode of challenging behavior. There are many benefits to using video modeling as an alternative to live in-person modeling. Video models can be presented multiple times without the original person having to be present. Sometimes you need a skilled instructor to demonstrate the skill, or you might need a peer or another child might be the best kind of model for the target behavior. And if that model is not always available during every learning opportunity you might want to use them for, then video modeling kind of solves that problem of being able to show models at any time you might want to have a learning opportunity. A video model also increases the consistency and accuracy of instruction because you can present exactly the same model for every learning opportunity. You can also carefully edit the video models so that you can make sure that any mistakes are eliminated from the video and only the correct way of doing the skill is presented every single time. Also, there are practical limitations related to the environment and time of day that can be reduced with video modeling. With video models, you can provide realistic examples of using a skill in the appropriate environment. So behaviors like crossing the street or paying for groceries at the store can be filmed and modeled in the actual environment, the street and the grocery store, where the skill is supposed to occur. Also, sometimes you may need more than one person to model a skill, like a conversational exchange, like two people talking, or sharing a toy or purchasing groceries. So video models can limit the time commitment of that second person because they only need to be present for you to film the video model, whereas with live modeling, they would have to be present every single time you provided the instruction. So now that you know some of the basics of video modeling, let's discuss some of the situations in which video modeling might be best to incorporate into instruction. Using a video model could increase the efficiency of teaching when you have multiple children who could benefit from video modeling and need to learn a similar skill. There are many websites where parents kind of share video models to kind of achieve this, this issue. A video model can also be particularly beneficial when you need to highlight or isolate certain features of a model to increase the child's focus on a specific target behavior. Occasionally, children with disabilities pay attention to the wrong features of a model. For example, if a child was learning to tie her shoes, instead of watching the model make loops with the laces, she might look at the person's wrists or the toe of the shoe. And then she wouldn't be able to acquire the skill of tying her shoes if she wasn't looking at the right part of the video, or I'm sorry, of the model. A video model can zoom in on just the shoelaces and crop out all of the distracting parts of the model, ensuring that the child can only focus on the critical parts of the behavior. Additionally, a video model can use what's called point-of-view camera angles so that the child can see exactly what it looks like when she performs the behavior correctly instead of seeing what it looks like when someone else performs a behavior. A point of view camera angle is simply when the camera is directed as though, you know, you are seeing what the person who is doing the behavior is seeing. This can be particularly beneficial when modeling small, detailed behaviors like drawing, cooking, or tying shoes. When teaching opportunities are limited by time of day, setting, or instructors, a video model is also a good alternative to live modeling because it can increase the number of learning opportunities. Since a video model can be presented multiple times, it makes sure that the child has plenty of opportunities to practice the skill. And finally, video modeling can be beneficial if you already have easy access to technology that can play a video, because much of the cost related to using video models is associated with purchasing the equipment. You need to have consistent access to either a TV and DVD player, a computer, a smartphone, or a tablet to allow the child to have multiple opportunities to view the video model. So if your access to technology is limited, you might want to consider a live model to ensure that you have enough teaching opportunities. Now let's discuss the features of a good video model. There are a few features you must consider when looking for or creating a good video model. The video model should have a clear demonstration of the target behavior. That's the behavior that you want to teach. The model, the video model, should be completely visible without squinting, and there should not be any obstructions to the view, like a hand blocking part of the steps of tying the shoes. The video model should also clearly show all of the steps without skipping or speeding through any of the steps. A good video model will also have all of the distracting variables eliminated. Some examples of the things that could be distracting for kids with autism are background music, the sound of wind blowing into the microphone of a camera, or background posters or toys or activities. A good video model will show the behavior occurring in the right environment when necessary. If the target behavior is raising a hand in the classroom, a good video model would show a person raising their hand in the classroom. Additionally, a video model of crossing the street would show the behavior on a street and not in a classroom or a therapy room. Also, a good video model only shows the target behavior or non-examples of the target behavior, so basically wrong ways to do it. Any other unrelated behaviors should not be included. And finally, a good video model also shows multiple examples of the behavior. As you know, many behaviors have a variety of acceptable variations. So, for example, with greetings, I might say hi or hello or hey there, and all of those are considered acceptable greetings. So a good video model should include all of the examples, including demonstrations with different people, different objects, different places where it might occur, and different types of behavior. So you could have one video that shows multiple different examples played in succession, or you could find several different videos where each video is one example of the behavior. So now that you know what to look for in a good video model, let's discuss some of the ways that you can find one. You have a few options when looking for good video models. You may be able to find free video models on the internet, on the TV, or in a library. If you can't find a free video model, there are companies that create video models for people with special needs available for purchase. Occasionally, there will not be a well-designed video model for the skill that you're targeting, or you may need to show a specific environment. So, for example, how to use your shower. And you will need to create, then you'll need to create your own video. The next few slides that I place will kind of examine the pros and cons of each option for accessing video models. So first we're going to talk about free video models. So it's really great if you can find free video models to use when teaching the target behavior. The videos are obviously at no cost to you, and you don't have to spend the time and resources to film the videos yourself. However, you may find free videos aren't appropriate for your child because they don't meet all of the criteria we talked about for good video models. perhaps the skill doesn't quite match the behavior you want to teach, or the video has too many distractors, or the perspective or the framing isn't quite right. It also might take a while to find the right high-quality video of the behavior you want to teach. And so you could spend hours searching on the Internet for great examples and non-examples of just one behavior. It's also possible that the right video model for your child may not exist as a free video. There may be free videos that are close or are similar to the behavior, but they may not model it exactly the way you need to teach it. Finally, free videos are usually found on the Internet, and so you may need access to high-speed Internet during your teaching session, during when you want to teach the new skill, in order to show the video model. And some locations just might not have Internet access. So, for example, if you wanted to teach purchasing at a grocery store or at a mall, if they didn't have access to Internet, you might not be able to show that video. Now we're going to discuss purchasing video models. Several companies have video models specifically designed for individuals with disabilities available for purchase. The video modeling products include libraries of video that address a variety of different skills. A simple Internet search for video modeling and autism will bring up results for different video modeling products you can purchase. Additionally, if you plan to use a mobile device or a tablet to play the video models, you can conduct an application search through your app store with the same search terms to find video modeling apps. One benefit of purchasing video models is that you save a lot of time searching for videos. Another benefit of purchased video models is that the videos are created specifically for people with developmental disabilities. So the skills that are addressed are likely to be appropriate for your child. Additionally, because the videos are professionally recorded, they're usually more likely to have high-quality sound and high-quality lighting, so the model is easy to see and hear. The videos often will also have distracting variables already eliminated and will focus only on the important features of the model. Additionally, each company can also have a huge library of videos to search through to find the best model. So you should be able to find a good model for the skill you want to teach. There are also considerations for purchasing video models. One consideration is that the video libraries may be too expensive if you have a limited budget. Additionally, you need to make sure that the videos will be compatible with the player you actually want to use to present the videos. If the videos aren't compatible with your video player, then you won't be able to play the videos when you need to. Finally, it's still possible that the right model for your child may not exist even in a large library of pre-made videos. So if you're still not able to find a video model that demonstrates the behavior you need to teach, you may need to create your own. So now we're going to talk about creating your own video models. There are a few unique benefits of creating your own video model. First, you can customize the video by ensuring the model is exactly the way you want it. You can also include specific examples and non-examples of the behavior that are appropriate for your child and match your exact behavior that you want to teach. You can also use familiar people or even your child as the model if that's important to you and your child. Additionally, the target behavior can be filmed in the exact environment where the behavior should take place. For example, if you wanted to teach making the bed, the video could be filmed at your home in your own child's bedroom to make it easier for her to learn the specific behavior of making her bed. However, creating video models can require a lot of resources. It can be expensive to purchase the equipment and the editing software if you don't already have it. Additionally, it takes significant amount of time to record and edit videos, and you also have to have at least some technical experience and familiarity with the software program to edit the videos before having a complete video model that can be presented to your child. It also usually requires more than one person to create a video. You usually need at least one person in charge of the camera and at least one person to act in the video as a model for the skill. So it may be difficult to find someone with the time or the skills to help you record the video. So once you've selected the video model, you must then plan how you want to show the video. So first, you're going to want to determine what medium you want to use to show the video. So there are many different types of video player options, including smartphones, iPads or tablets, computers, portable DVD players, as well as TVs with DVD players. You should also pay attention to a couple of important considerations when you're planning which player you're going to use. We want to make sure that the display of the device is large enough to show the important details in the video. If you need your child to look at specific details of the model, either have a large enough display, like a TV or computer or iPad or tablet, or zoom into the video so that your child can see the specific details on a smaller screen. It's also important to think about whether or not the audio will be loud enough from the device you're using in the environment where the video will be played. The child might need to wear headphones if the video is played in a noisy environment, but you should definitely make sure to test out if your child will tolerate wearing headphones before you present the video with headphones for the first time. Sometimes video models are presented in the environment where the skill will be performed. You may also need to transfer the video player to multiple environments. So it's important that that player then is both sturdy and durable. And if the video player might also need to be protective from materials associated with doing the behavior. So for example, if you're teaching a skill of shaving in the bathroom, you would want your video player to be protected from water and shaving cream that might splash up on it. Additionally, several devices you might consider using are also used for other purposes, particularly computers, tablets, and smartphones. So you might need to think about whether your child will be distracted by the other uses of the video player, like playing games, accessing the internet, watching other types of videos like TV shows, and consider either a different device or create a plan for how you're going to respond if he or she tries to kind of access a game or get on the internet instead of watch the video model. Remember also that some video file formats may not be compatible with your device, so it's important to check the video file format and the compatibility with your device before trying to present the video model to teach your child. You also need to decide who will be controlling the video player. You can either control it or your child can control it. And if your child controls the video player, you need to be sure that he or she has all the prerequisite skills to kind of navigate through the system and use the video player effectively. Finally, you might prefer that your child watch the video model while he or she is doing the behavior instead of watching it before performing the behavior. So your child may then need additional skills to learn how to click to go to the next video clip while completing the task, and then again it may be more important to consider that durability of the device and the protection from the task material. You also want to consider several important practical details when you're planning to show a video. First, you want to think about where the child will need to view the video model. He or she might need to watch the video in different rooms of the house, at school, or in the community to reduce the delay between watching the video model and the opportunity to imitate the skill. So if portability of the video player is important for teaching the skill, then make sure you're using a device that can be easily moved from place to place. And also make sure that the device has enough battery life or that you have access to a power source so that the player doesn't lose power in the middle of your teaching session. Most free videos are found on the internet. You will also need to determine beforehand if the environment will allow you to access the internet. So if you're working on a skill in the community, like purchasing items, you're going to want to make sure you have access to the internet so they can actually watch the video of someone making a purchase right before it's time to make the purchase. Finally, you might consider the immediate environment where you're teaching the skill. If there are multiple distractions that might prevent your child from paying attention to the video, you should try to minimize or remove them before you start your video model. You could offer your child headphones, or you could maybe play the video right before going into that potentially distracting environment. You'll also need to determine when and how many times the video will be shown as a model. Most studies evaluating the effects of video modeling have included multiple viewings of the video prior to the opportunity for the child to imitate. So you should consider showing the video two or three times before you give her the opportunity to imitate to promote her success in learning. In addition, the video model can be shown multiple times a day or multiple times a week as learning opportunities arise. So, for example, a child who's learning to wash her hands independently, she might have about 6 to 8 opportunities a day to practice this skill. You should also determine if you'll show the video model immediately before or during the behavior. For example, for cooking, you may want to have the child watch the entire video before entering the kitchen and then watch it again while they're cooking and pausing each step as they complete it. The amount of time a child has to wait between watching the video model and actually imitating the behavior can have an important impact on the effectiveness of the video model. The child is likely to perform more poorly and forget some steps if the behavior too much time has passed between viewing the video and the opportunity to imitate. So try to decrease that delay as much as possible. You can have the child watch or rewatch the video while performing the skill to further decrease the amount of time between viewing the video and performing the skill. This suggestion is particularly important if the video model or the skill you're trying to teach is a multi-step skill, like toothbrushing or cooking or hand washing, rather than a single behavior. You also need to consider how you'll respond if your child makes an error when they're trying to imitate the video model. So if an error occurs while your child is trying to imitate the video model, you might choose one of several strategies. One strategy is that you could provide live prompts, such as repeating the instruction, pointing to the object, or gentle physical guidance to increase the likelihood that your child can imitate the behavior correctly. You could also re-present the video, so show the video again, and then immediately provide a prompt after the child watches the video again. Finally, you can pause the video or return to an earlier point in the video to allow your child to watch the step again before attempting to imitate again. Whatever you decide to do, it's important to just have a plan for responding to an error before you begin instruction. Lastly, you must decide how you will reinforce or reward accurate imitation of the new skill. So you'll need to select reinforcers or rewards that will be provided each time your child imitates accurately. So you should think of something your child really likes. Some kids like toys or snacks or just, you know, a praise and a pat on the back from you. If you can save what your child likes best and provide it as a reward for correct imitation, you'll help teach the skill more quickly. Once you've determined which reinforcers you will use, then you'll need to decide how much of the reinforcer you want to deliver after correct imitation. For example, if you're delivering a cookie, you might just give a tiny little bite of the cookie. Or if you're letting them play video games after they correctly imitate, you might just give them access to the video game for 1 or 2 minutes. You want to make sure you don't give them too much or too long of the reward, or they kind of might not be motivated to continue learning. Finally, you must determine how often the reinforcer or reward will be delivered. Initially, you want to provide your reinforcer every single time correct imitation occurs or after every few steps in a multi-step skill like toothbrushing. So over time, you'll provide the reinforcer less and less frequency, but it's always a good idea to provide praise after every correct imitation so your child knows that you value them getting a correct answer. Remember, the quality of your praise for correct responses and new skills is just as important as the quality of your video model if you want to see your child make the quickest progress. So in sum, video modeling is a useful tool for teaching a variety of new skills for kids who have the prerequisite skills needed. And there are multiple options for accessing videos, models, and for creating video models, as well as for playing them. And if you just consider the variables we just discussed, you should be able to have a successful teaching opportunity for your child. Now we're going to switch gears a little bit and discuss the applications on smartphones and tablets. Smartphones and tablets can be a useful piece of technology to use with children with autism because many children, both with and without disabilities, enjoy interacting with them. Additionally, their touch screens can be easier for children to use than a traditional mouse or touchpad mouse on computers and laptops. Also, smartphones and tablets are lightweight and easy to carry around, which makes them the more portable than other types of technology. This can allow the child to interact with a smartphone or tablet in traditionally difficult locations, like the grocery store, a restaurant, or at their sibling's baseball game. Smartphones and tablets also have app stores, which allow easy access to hundreds of apps or applications that are suitable for children with autism. Many of the apps are free or low cost, and Autism Speaks actually has a list of autism-friendly apps on their websites, and this list is combined of apps that have been submitted by professionals as well as parents of children with autism. It is important to note that this list has not been edited or vetted by Autism Speaks, so some apps might be higher quality or more well-suited for children with autism than others. There are some considerations for using smartphones or tablets. The main consideration is the cost of purchasing this technology if you don't already have access to it. If you want to purchase a smartphone or a tablet specifically for your child, you should be prepared to spend several hundred dollars on it. Also, many funding sources that typically cover therapeutic equipment don't cover the purchase of smartphones or tablets because they're considered leisure items. However, many technology companies offer no-interest payment plans if you want to purchase a smartphone or tablet and pay it off in smaller installments. Another thing to consider is how much battery life a smartphone or tablet has. Apps typically use up the battery more quickly than the reported specs for the equipment or specification. You should also consider that smartphones typically have a shorter battery life than tablets, mostly because the battery is smaller than in a tablet. The final consideration when thinking about a smartphone or a tablet is its durability. Most devices are quite fragile and are not shockproof or waterproof. So if your child engages in property destruction, like throwing or hitting items, or is just simply clumsy, or likes to play in water, and you still want to purchase a smartphone or tablet, you should also make the investment in protective equipment to prevent the technology from breaking. So on the slide that I provided, there are a couple of examples of protective equipment that can protect tablets from being broken. Apps can be used to teach a variety of skills, including communication. For example, an app could teach receptive language, like point to the cow. There are also several apps that serve as augmentative and alternative communication devices, or AAC devices. These apps allow the child to point to a picture or icon, and then the program will produce the auditory word that the picture represents. Apps can also be used to teach social skills, like following social rules and responding to social situations. Additionally, apps can be used to promote self-management skills, like following schedules, using reminders to complete tasks, staying on task, and following routines at home, school, or work. Apps can also teach functional or daily living skills, like brushing your teeth, bathing, or using a phone. Finally, numerous apps have been created to teach academic skills like math, reading, spelling, and geography. There are several important variables to consider when looking to use an app to teach a new skill. First, do you need to teach your child how to use or navigate through the device? If they don't know how to swipe, zoom into an image, or go back to the previous screen, you may need to teach them how to use the device before they can access the instructions. Also, you may want to consider if your child uses a smartphone or tablet for other reasons, like watching videos or playing games, as well as instruction. Having access to the games might distract her from learning the skill. So you should have a plan for how you'll prevent your child from accessing those games or those videos when you want her to learn. The final point to consider is if you want your child to only use the skill in or within device, or if you want her to use it all of the time in the real world. Some skills like typing or answering a phone call or using an AAC device can all be used with just the smartphone or the tablet. However, if you want your child to learn a skill with the device and then use it in the real world, you may have to test if they can do it in the real world or provide additional instruction to help them. So let's go into each of these variables in a little bit more detail. If you need to teach your child how to use a smartphone or a tablet, there are several games you can access through your app store that can make it really fun and engaging to teach them the skills. These games can help your child to practice the skills that they need to use the device. However, you may still have to teach them by potentially modeling the skill, pointing to what they need to touch, or you can provide gentle physical guidance to teach them what to do. So in the PowerPoint I provided, there is a list of a few potential apps that you could access to teach your kids how to use an iPad or a tablet. So I'll just briefly list some of them, and you can kind of find them in your app store. The first is Slide to Unlock by R.J. Cooper and Associates. Next, there's Dexteria, Fine Motor Skill Development by Binary Labs. Next is Color Dots and Dot Collector by Ellie Games. And then the last is Fruit Ninja by Half Brick Studios. And all of these teach kind of a lot of the simple skills of swiping, touching and dragging, and expanding and contracting. Now let's talk about if there are distracting features to the device, like games or videos. If you have this issue and your child frequently just navigates away from the learning app and navigates towards the games or videos, you can restrict your child's access to those specific applications or functions. If you complete an internet search for the name of your device, so for example, iPad, and either the search term application restrictions or guided access, you can find instructions for how to restrict access on your specific device. Typically, application restrictions requires a password for you for the user to access specific applications or to get online, whereas guided access temporarily restricts the person to one app and disables any navigation or use of the hardware buttons, like the home button on an iPad. So now let's talk about making sure your child can do the skill outside of the app. So not all apps are designed specifically for children with autism, and many apps are designed to be colorful and engaging with songs and sound effects and animations. These features can either work to increase your child's interest, or it could distract your child from learning the skill. Also, some children with autism may only pay attention to the colors or the songs or the animations, so when those things aren't present, your child may struggle to complete the skill. So if you're using an app only to teach a skill, you may want to test to see if your child can use the skill outside of the smartphone or tablet. So you should test the skill using your kind of traditional in-person methods to see if your child can do the skill in all environments where he would need to use it. So you might be asking yourself, what should I do if my child can't do the skill outside of the app? So I, in the slide, provided a couple of troubleshooting questions to consider. So if your child simply seems unmotivated to do the skill live, he may need additional rewards or reinforcements. Remember, we talked about that concept with video modeling. For many children, just getting to interact with a smartphone or a tablet are reinforcing in and of itself. So they may not need additional rewards like they do with a live interaction. So you might consider saving some reward for correct use of the skill. Also, if your child seems confused when you provide the instructions for the live task, try to find out if you're using the exact same instruction as is provided in the app. For example, a small difference between where's the cow and find the cow can make a big difference and cause errors. So if you're not using the same instruction, you may need to provide extra teaching outside of the app so that your child can respond to different variations of instructions that they might hear. Finally, if your child is making consistent errors on the skill that he already mastered in the app and it seems like the errors are the same, so for example, I say point to the cow and he always points to the dog. This may be because he learned the skill one specific way inside the app. So you may need to provide additional teaching using multiple examples of the skill, and you could do that either live or in other apps that teach the same skill. It's always important to teach multiple examples of the skill so we can make sure that kids can use the skill in multiple different ways and in different environments and with different people and different examples of the behavior. Let's chat a little bit about using an app for an AAC device. So that's the alternative and augmentative communication device. There are many benefits to using an app as the communication device. First, many apps are available that can be high-tech versions of evidence-based treatments like the Picture Exchange Communication System, or PECS. In the app, it can be much easier to add and remove communication icons to be more responsive to your child's growing communication needs. A smartphone or tablet are also more compact, more lightweight, and more socially discreet than other AAC devices, and that might be a benefit to you and your child. However, they are more fragile than other AAC devices, which are designed specifically for use by people with developmental disabilities. So if you think they're likely to kind of get dropped or knocked around a little, you might consider going with traditional AAC devices. Some things to consider are if you're going to teach your child to use the tablet for their main mode of communication for their AAC device, then you want to make sure that the child needs to have access to this tablet at all times, so they shouldn't be sharing it with anyone. You should consider purchasing the tablet specifically for this use so that you don't have to take their way of communicating away to allow siblings to play games on the tablet or for you to pay your bills on it. Also, you should consider if the tablet is your child's only favorite item to kind of play with. And if you want to teach your child to communicate using it, it can be very difficult to teach the initial communication with the device. Your child will likely be distracted by the other features of the tablet, like playing games or getting on the internet to watch videos, or might be unmotivated to communicate with others when he already has access to his favorite activity. Finally, you should consult experts in trying to teach your child to use a communication device. Behavior analysts like myself or speech pathologists can be a big help with you as you try to teach your child how to communicate. It can be a very big undertaking, and they can be definitely a great resource. So in summary, smartphones and tablet apps are easily accessible, but purchasing the actual piece of technology can be quite costly. You also need to consider that you're going to likely need to protect the device from potentially being dropped or exposure to water or other materials. You may also need to teach your child to teach the prerequisite skills in order to effectively use the tablet or the smartphone. And you may need to continue to teach your child the skill outside of the app in order for them to have a kind of robust skill that they can use in multiple environments. In sum, technology can enhance treatment or can provide the sole source of treatment, even though it's still not a substitute for a live expert. And there are many variables to consider when thinking about using technology with your child. But the most important thing to consider is, does this provide a significant improvement over the low-tech equivalent? And if the answer is yes, then please feel free to use the variables. And if the answer is no, then you might consider using the low-tech equivalent. Thank you so much for your careful attention during this presentation. I'd like to now turn it over to Gwen so that she can start the survey, and then we can have questions at the end.
Thank you. To help us evaluate and approve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that corresponds to your choice. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Question number one, this session provided me with education on using technology to enhance treatment and increase independence in a child with autism. Star one, strongly agree. Star two, agree. Star three, disagree. Star four, strongly disagree. And we're just waiting for a few more responses. Question number two. This session educated me on video modeling, smartphone, and tablet applications. Star one, strongly agree. Star two, agree. Star three, disagree. Star four, strongly disagree. And we're just waiting for a few more responses. And question number three. Overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Star one, strongly agree. Star two, agree. Star three, disagree. Star four, strongly disagree. And question number four. I would recommend this program to others. Star one, agree. Star two, if you do not agree. And just waiting for a few more responses. And question number five. Please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Star one, I am the parent of a child with autism. Star two, I am a family member of a child with autism. Star three, other. Thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you would like to make any additional comments to help us improve this program or have any questions on today's topic, please press star 1 at this time. Once again, that is star 1 if you do have a question. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. Please state your name before posing your question. And as a reminder, that is star 1 if you do have a question or comment at this time. And there are no questions at this time.
Thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Dr. Geiger, for providing such wonderful insights. Again, if you have questions about therapies discussed today, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Autism Awareness Series next month, September 12th, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, when we will be discussing how to help your child with autism sleep better. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, everyone. That does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation.